Hey, everybody, and welcome to a fresh new series of episodes of Frank About Health. I'm here with my permanent co-host, the lovely Meredith Gray. Just kidding. No, Dr. Phyllis. Dr. Phyllis Quinlan. But more importantly, I want to add that this is part two of a very good episode that I had on Eric Sarver's show, Employment Health Today, this past Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m., we happen to be on the same time slot 2 days later to do part two. There were very interesting questions that, as I've always indicated, I'm not a professional doctor. And as such, I'm not a professional attorney either. So therefore, having someone like Phyllis here, who has experience in the legal side of healthcare organizations, as well as certain laws and mandates that especially have arisen during COVID, are something that we will see later on in the program, the conversation, where some of those questions can be further enhanced as well as answered. But I want to first welcome Eric for coming back to this show. I thought our show on Tuesday was very inspiring. I mean, I'm even thinking over, you know, the terms of my company, Healthy Media, which we discussed during your show, about some of the changes I have to be mindful for as I further develop my deal with Hilton Hotels that we spoke of. And I also knew that, Phyllis, you would be able to add some additional insight into some of the things that are constantly in flux within the media every day, whether it has to do with individuals or whether it has to do with organizations. So at least this sequel to what we started on Tuesday is going to be a perfect bookend, and I'm looking forward. For those of you who are not aware who Eric Sarver is, let me spend a moment to give you his background. First and foremost, he is also a host right here on talkradio.nyc on his show, again, Employment Law Today. And he has a very interesting legal background. Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to read your bio. It'll be a little bit scripted, but at least I want to give you your due. So,
sure thing. Thank you.
Eric, you're very welcome. Eric Sarver has been an attorney in New York for more than 23 years. He first opened the law offices of Eric M. Sarver in April of 2001. After previously working as an associate attorney at a Park Avenue law firm and subsequently serving as counsel at a prominent civil rights firm, Eric Sarver has practiced employment law and business law both on behalf of employees and in defense of management. By advocating for his clients' interests through mediation, arbitration, and in the courts, the law offices of Eric M. Sarver further provides legal guidance to business owners to navigate the complex maze of labor and employment laws, including those that are COVID-19 related, that it covers the hiring, the firing, and the management of those employees. Now, what I find intriguing is, being my background is in business, as has been in healthcare more recently, I look back at the way that you've been practicing your law, and I always think on behalf of the management. But Phyllis brings a unique perspective. We're talking about the nurses, the doctors, the essential workers, all of the healthcare professionals that I'm sure have had their own paradigm shift, unlike typical management in various sectors. So I'm looking forward to us spending about 15 minutes or so on that whole shift, especially since it's all related to the collective organizational changes and laws that need to be revised in order to accommodate what is continually in flux until there's finally some stability with this pandemic. Now, I know one of the things we talked about is that you're noticing in legal circles that most employment laws that are revised or mandated are reactive rather than proactive. So hopefully what we can learn from this episode of Frank About Health is exactly how we can learn to try to be proactive, whether it's adapting to existing laws or coming up with new creative ideas that could become laws. And so that's what I'm definitely also looking forward to talk about on this show. But for all the listeners out there, just know that this is part two of a two-episode block. Again, part one, it was called Mental Health and Employment Law Post-COVID. It's the same episode here, except it's part two. So sooner or later, Talk Radio NYC will air these back-to-back because I think it's good to have both perspectives, especially since we're dealing with such an evolving sectors or evolving industry or profession such as healthcare, which has been the catalyst in this entire pandemic. So thanks again, Eric, for being here on the show. And of course, thanks for Phyllis for joining me on all our various shows we've done so far. So I wanted to first open up the floor to you, Eric, and get some of your additional questions that may have arisen out of our first interview.
Sure thing, Frank. Let me just say, first off, thank you again for having me on the show tonight. And Phyllis, I look forward to the conversation. I think between the three of us, I think we can come up with some interesting perspectives. Frank, from a mental health perspective, and Phyllis as well, with your medical and nurse background and coaching, and myself as an employment law attorney. And your question, Frank, if you could just one more time there,
Based on some of the questions you had for me, right. I may have left out some of the answers you were anticipating, or I may not have been fully explaining myself because of the expertise that you're familiar with versus what I've experienced. So I thought if there were any additional questions that I may not have answered or that you may have had since the show, I wanted to discuss them right now.
Sure thing, Frank. Sure thing. I think like one question we had was about, what are some of the changes that we're seeing in employment in terms of more and more people with mental health and disability, mental health illness and situations, seeking out reasonable accommodation requests, from their employers, from their place of work. You know, what are the laws allowing for employees to do? What are employers' obligations? I think that's something that we maybe didn't quite get to on my show on Tuesday.
Or just touched upon it a little bit.
Yeah, just a touch. I think we touched upon it briefly.
When I remember that question, even thinking about it now, all I could say from personal experience is I've noticed a whole myriad of professionals, whether they are teachers, whether they are lawyers, whether they are doctors themselves, that are finding a leniency towards wanting to work from home because they have found it to be a place of mental peace and relaxation and calm. Because of all of the input that they're getting from everyday media and their patients and their clients and their students, depending on the profession, there's just this hypervigilance and this I don't want to just say PTSD like the be all end all, but there's this hyper reaction to what used to be considered, okay, this is a fire I need to put out and let me deal with it.
Yeah.
So I think that the desire is not to go back to work. Mm-hmm. And I gather the laws that are either in place, like some organizations are doing hybrid, some are saying come to work 3 days a week and work 4 days at home, you know, including weekends, or just see your clients virtually, but still come into the office. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's a lot of negotiation between the employees and the organizations, depending on the type of organization, that mm-hmm. are willing to make those adjustments. But as we've been seeing, it's all on demand. It's all at the point of necessity rather than pre-planning in advance for what if scenarios, which is what I think something, Phyllis, you might be able to chime in on. But at the same time, maybe laws need to be created to start looking forward as to what the new normal may look like in the workplace.
Yeah. Oh, Phyllis, did you want to jump in there?
Well, I was just going to say is from a clinical healthcare professional perspective, mm-hmm. clearly it what you specialize in, what your role is, mm-hmm. you know, if you have a bedside role, so much for virtual, you know, there are some practicality pieces, but that doesn't mean that healthcare isn't slowly moving to something that is either some form of virtual or some form of hybrid. Right now we have a role in nursing called case managers or nursing care navigators. And many times that can be done as a hybrid where some of that is done from home, some of that is done at the bedside when you're rounding with the team. Mostly they're doing a lot of discharge planning, but there is a tremendous amount of phone and collaboration and authorizations from insurance companies that need to take place that certainly lend itself to working virtually, you know. And then telemedicine, the whole new push for telemedicine is going to be something that I'm excited to see what it brings. I'm hoping it brings increased access. I'm hoping that it really speaks to our elder population, and for people who really have challenges getting to and from the physicians making those appointments. I think it's exciting. It's a little intimidating, but exciting nonetheless.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I jump in, Frank?
Sure, absolutely.
Great. I think Phil's excellent point, bring up the healthcare industry. And what I'm seeing is, like, in the industry, I see that with this issue of remote work, there are several, I think, motivations, like, the companies are using to decide, do we go back full-time in person fully? Do we go remote or a mix, a hybrid? Some of them are business, practical, right? Hey, do we save money on office space, on people's travel expenses? Can we hire from other states? Like, is that business component? But from a legal perspective around, say, like bring it back to mental health and accommodations, I think that with COVID, some see it as a liability issue. They think if we're going to force people to come back, and let's say a second wave hits or a new variant, people get sick on our watch, can we have some kind of liability factor there? Whether it's workers' comp for, say, an unsafe workplace that someone gets sick from, or a negligence lawsuit. But from the employment law perspective around disability law, I think that, you know, the accommodation could be an employee might say, hey, either I've got like long-term, long-haul, I guess COVID is called, right? Long-term, long-haul mm-hmm. COVID. Mm-hmm. And maybe I don't have the energy, the wherewithal to commute to and from the workplace like every day. I think so my accommodation request would be, I can still perform my job duties. That's the key analysis. Can they still perform their job duties while working remotely? You made the good point about a bedside person. If, you know, if you're a surgeon, you probably can't do your job remotely, right? If, same thing if you're an executive chef at a restaurant, can't cook food from afar. But many jobs do have that that capability, especially with all the technology. So I think the question is, like, say, if an employee suffers from, say, anxiety disorder or depression, if the cutting out the commute, if being, as Frank mentioned, in their home environment will keep them feeling, say, less anxious or safer, as long as they can show they can substantially perform their job duties and that the accommodation to work from home is not going to hurt the company from a point of view of operations, a financial point of view, or just any threat to the company, then it really should be, I think, a trend we're seeing more often.
Yeah, I agree with you, Eric. And I think we saw some of that in the early days of COVID. You know, not every healthcare worker is in their all optimal state of wellness. You know, many of the healthcare workers were battling oncology and hematology issues. So for them to be in the presence of that potential virus was a life-threatening situation. So, you know, many times we had to make adaptations about what that role was and perhaps put them in a virtual role or even put them in an office space where they were doing other things that were productive, mm-hmm. that were commensurate with their education and their abilities, you know, but also took in mind that, you know, putting this person, you know, at the bedside was dangerous and we couldn't allow that to happen.
Right. Yeah, very true.
No, I mean, well, we actually have 1 minute before our first break, but I wanted to say that in the next section to further answer that question that was somewhat left unresolved and hopefully we'll resolve it tonight. I want to talk to you a little bit more about the Hilton model that I had explored prior to coming back to Frank About Health, but that I think actually might be a prototype that lawyers can learn from as to how they were dealing with their organization during a pandemic where they integrated with the hospital system, but at the same time maintained their private sector relationship in the tourism business. And it might be something that can help lawyers come up with new mandates or new regulations that'll be more adaptable to people as we continue to climb out of this pandemic. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome again to this episode of Frank About Health. We're covering mental health and employment law part two. We will be back right here on talkradio.nyc and Facebook Live in just a few.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Everybody, and welcome back to this episode of Frank About Health. Here we are in segment two, where we have just spent the last 15 minutes talking with both Eric and Phyllis about the whole nature of how there's a paradigm shift in employment laws, whether it's in the healthcare sector or in other sectors overall, especially while people are trying to determine the best ways of being able to react to the constant changes in the workplace due to variants and due to other aspects of COVID-19. The mental health piece of it is we're just observing a hypervigilance and a different way of people relating to each other because of whether it's the phobia of reconnecting after months of not connecting or whether it's being used to the comforts of Zoom technology to be able to constantly do their business. As Phyllis mentioned, there are certain professions where that's just not possible, like surgery. And basically what I wanted to now address in sort of a conclusion to that mysterious question that wasn't completely answered on Tuesday is my work that I had been doing with Hilton Hotels over the last 18 months. Mm-hmm. First of all, as far as Hilton is concerned, I was employed by them for about 3 months back in 2016. It was in their timeshare organization, Hilton Grand Vacations. And when I had left it, I left actually for some medical testing on my part because my viewers and listeners know that I do have epilepsy. But basically, as a result, I wanted to turn my relationship with Hilton when I came back from my testing to be a partnership because I saw what their timeshare business was doing for retirees. And so at the time, not knowing that COVID was upon us because that didn't happen until 2020, I had approached Hilton towards being able to get involved in campaigns to welcome timeshare owners who are seniors looking to retire the rest of their life by traveling around the world and experiencing a very relaxing retirement. Lo and behold, the pandemic comes in March of 2020, and Hilton Hotels, as other hotel chains, shut down, with the exception that Hilton converted a lot of their New York City hotels. I can't speak for the rest of the country. I don't specifically know how they adapted, but within New York, since we were the epicenter, a lot of theirs were either, depending on the brand, Homewood Suites became the essential worker hotel, as well as those who were administering the vaccines at the Javits Center. They, you know, the armed guard, I can't remember the proper term, but they were released by the president to go ahead and, well, by the governor actually, to stormtroopers, you know.
National Guard?
National Guard, thank you, okay, all right.
Please, no, not stormtroopers.
You gotta forgive me.
That's your perspective.
Maybe this is my own PTSD from the whole thing.
Okay, sure enough.
So, but the thing is that essentially the National Guard was living at Homewood Suites as well, and they would go to the Javits Center right there on 12th Avenue and administer vaccines during the first wave, which were actually the group A, the healthcare worker. Now, I think that was when we only had Pfizer. Now, simultaneously, the other brand, Hilton Garden Inn, became the homeless shelter system, which at that time, our mayor Bill de Blasio, was basically mandating that specific brand to be literally turned into an organization that had a doorman, that had your mail delivered there, that had your food delivered there, that you would get your vaccine submitted there if you were homeless. And obviously not, you couldn't move around the city. But the thing is that they were able to derive not a good profit margin. The hospitality industry went down by about 5 to 10%, especially in the third and fourth quarters of 2020. Mm-hmm. But they were able to offset their revenues by welcoming, instead of tourists, the people that were healing the sick. especially when there was no vaccine or cure-all for COVID-19 at that time, and the rest of us were quarantining. Now, after that subsided and the first round of vaccines went through, I actually met with the general manager of that particular Homewood Suites, and he told me that they have decided that the Hilton family, the Hilton brand, was going to work hard to bring back their brand integrity to be competitive with the other chains like Marriott and Wyndham and others like that. But they wanted to be known not just as a hospitality company, but as a healthcare brand, a socially responsible brand. Now, that means that even now, as we are recovering and they Broadway has reopened and they're bringing their tourists back, they still have units dedicated to essential workers, to anyone that is concerned about helping our society reinvigorate during, you know, getting back to normal, whatever that new normal is going to be. And so as such, that was the birth of my company, Healthy Media, which was to create media platforms and marketing programs for the hospitality industry to attract those people in the healthcare space to actually buy units to live in during crises like this. So that would involve a long relationship, again, with my former employer, Hilton Grand Vacations. The timeshare business had to shut down. Nobody was thinking about traveling. So they had to think about, okay, it's equivalent to buying a healthcare condo. You know, so that is the business model that they are still aiming for. Mm-hmm. And they're interested in shows like Frank About Health, as well as the work that you've done with your firm to be able to come up with a business model that help them create an ecosystem that will be both pandemic ready or post-pandemic ready, but at the same time to continue to be a travel and entertainment company. You know, so what I'm seeing in that one case, there might be other sectors, other companies in their respective sectors doing this, but I'm not too familiar with it other than in the case of the hospitality sector. So for that reason alone, what I'm thinking is as they continue to evolve and change, they may need to come up with new employment laws to take care of their managers, to take care of their travelers, to take care of their timeshare owners, to take care of the essential worker. And this is something that I will find out more about in the coming months. As you both know, I was in Seattle recently at a Homewood Suites there, and they themselves are doing the same thing. They seem to be in their own way based on their own limitations and restrictions, but they gave me their card and they want to do a follow-up show with Frank About Health sometime in March or April, but to basically show what Hilton is doing to becoming the essential place to stay. You know, and I guess this is where lawyers such as yourself and advocates such as you, Phyllis, may have ideas as to the kinds of employment laws that can adjust to the kind of individuals that would be residing in these places or even purchasing these places, knowing that it's a safe place to stay where they can work from home, but at the same time know they have the flexibility to leave to go to the office, where if they are an essential worker and they know there's a big surge going on like with Omicron, they can go to the hospital and then go to the nearby Homewood Suites where they would live on the employee rate that is given as an essential worker and until they're able to go home again to their families or friends or whomever, you know? So it's something that I'm seeing evolve, and I couldn't come up with a new law that should be created. But after I've just presented that to both of you, do you have any comments or ideas that you think that they would be interested in learning from?
Sure. Phyllis, did you?
Sure. My head is spinning. First of all, let me just give a big shout out to Hilton and company because, thank you for taking care of our extended family. We'll never be able to thank you enough, for that generosity and for stepping up and doing that and showing that kind of citizenship.
Right.
So my head is spinning on several levels because as you know, Frank, my clinical background is emergency trauma. So we don't close. Okay. We don't close for Hurricane Sandy. We don't close for forest fires. We don't close for Hurricane Katrina. We don't close for a pandemic. We don't close. All right. So You know, what is it that you can offer, you know, your team of clinicians and support services as far as peace of mind so that they can do their work when their worst fears might be that they're going to bring the virus home, as it was in COVID-19. And I have to tell you, many of our, you know, many of the clinicians that I know of, many circles, you know, many of the family members that I know of that were involved in the COVID response, whether it was from a clinical standpoint or a support service standpoint, you know, took advantage of the opportunities to stay away from home for the block of time that they did work. So in some cases they worked, you know, extraordinary stretches, and then maybe they had maybe 5 days off, and then they would go home for those 5 days, and then they would come back and, you know, see their family or try to catch up, and then they would again work extraordinary stretches. And but I'm also thinking, I think of the nurses that were caught in Hurricane Sandy, and, you know, where were they living afterwards? You know, you think about the Oklahoma, you know, tornadoes, and some of the tornadoes we've just seen recently that went through Kentucky. You know, where are those clinicians staying afterwards? So the Northwest forest fires, where are those first responders staying afterwards? So there may be a very real and strong opportunity for the hospitality industry to step up and play a major role in, you know, in providing housing, respite places, things of that nature. And it may just be the next out-of-box collaboration that faces healthcare industry right now. And, you know, the hippie in me, you know, 2022, it's all about collaboration and unlikely partnerships and all of that. The, you know, I'm just literally, Frank, my head is spinning with the possibilities of an alliance between between major healthcare networks and the hospitality industry.
Well, we're almost in our next break, but I think we have enough time to make one final statement about what you just said. The individual that I had met with was a guy that goes by the name of JL, Joseph Lomatola. And when I met him, he was basically touting about how, you know, everyone jokes about him being possible cousin of Tommy Mottola. I was in the music industry and everyone knows who he is, married to Mariah Carey, stuff like that. But when we got down to brass tacks and we were actually talking about what they've done to their hotel to make it an essential worker place, one of the things he said is that his role as a general manager for Hilton Worldwide was to use the word hospital in hospitality. Mm. That was part of
brilliant.
Exactly. That's what triggered me to contact Brilliant. Sam and get back this show. But now we're speaking about this show. We're about to go to our next break. And then what I want to do is, now that I've given that as hopefully an answer to our question that I hopefully at this point fully answered, there's another question that we decided to leave for today that we'll cover when we return. So ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned for our next segment right here on Frank About Health on talkradio.nyc and Facebook Live.
Howdy, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a cannabis enthusiast, a cannabis professional, or interested in entering the cannabis space? I'm Johnny Tsunami, and this is Planet Baco Lolo, a less taboo view. On our show, we will discuss the cannabis world through the perspective of various cannabis professionals. Tune in every Thursday evening, Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m., Talk Radio NYC, Planet Baco Lolo, a less taboo view.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to segment three of this episode of Frank About Health, where we are discussing mental health and employment law post-COVID part two. Eric, I think you wanted to have, you had some feedback on what we were just discussing in the last segment.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, well, first off, I'll echo what you both said, Frank and Phil. I think my hat's off to, you know, to Hilton. I think it's a very innovative idea they had, the way they implemented it, like really impressive, really something. You know, just a couple ideas that came to mind in the theme of our show tonight. We talked about like what Hilton did. The term that came to mind is like corporate social responsibility. You know, what's the ethical, moral, and business, you know, obligation to have some kind of social responsibility in running a business? And what we often see is that, you know, a lot of companies, like I think, are starting to realize that sometimes doing the right thing is compatible with increasing their profit margin and their better bottom line. You know, Starbucks, I think, was one company that I believe offered free coffee to all the healthcare workers, you know, lattes, whatever they want. They can come and sit and rest. And that's a nice, good thing to do and caffeinate them, keep them up and you know, rewarded. But also, then they're going to come in there and get their sandwich or something else. So it's like Hilton can then impress the families of those people and they might come and stay. So I think it's a good example that sometimes doing the right thing can be, yeah, good for society and profitable. It's the first thing. And two more points, if I may. I think you would ask the question, what new laws could this be an example or inspire? And just to kind of something that comes to mind, like, so it's interesting. In employment law, and, you know, we as attorneys, it's like, while we don't really, you know, pass new laws, like, of course, we have, like, the Bar Association, like, often is made up of lawyers who might weigh in opinion letters on certain legislation that might be pending or passing. So in that sense, you might have some influence, but usually we kind of create for our clients or companies certain policies. But the law usually provides a floor. This is the minimum that you must do or can't do, right? You must provide certain sick days. You must provide disability leave. But we can choose as a company, as employers, let's say, and as employment lawyers for them, to encourage people to have innovative policies. So it's almost like a rule or a law. So one quick example might be, maybe companies want to look at Hilton and say, like they had a good, they're able to provide some kind of housing. Well, maybe if we have workers who say are essential workers, like who often are lower income, maybe they don't have a private car to go home at night. If there's another surge, if they come to work, maybe we'll pay for their like private, you know, car service so that they don't have to take the bus or the subway and risk getting sick. So it's just an example of like how companies can look at this Hilton model, which again, I think is a great idea. I give them credit and say, what can we do that will accommodate people, you know, take into account health concerns and even be socially responsible and even improve our bottom line.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that a lot of that, depending on the brand of Hilton, because they have like 17 brands now, but depending, they have their own identity and culture. And in the case of Homewood Suites, they are essentially like condos. They have kitchens, they have living rooms, they have private suites and bedrooms and stuff like that, meeting spaces. You know, I think Embassy Suites is another brand that does that. But the thing is that due to the nature of all the you know, waking up early and taking a bus for free, at least at the time, especially here in New York City, and then going to a hospital and witnessing so much, I don't know what to call it, grief, horror, fear, whatever, but then also going back to home to that, they had a place, they had to sleep, and they couldn't sleep inside the hospital itself. So I guess they were forward thinking enough to open up their suites and brand them as we are here for the essential worker first and foremost. They even changed their whole pricing model, where a normal room, for example, the one that I dealt with at Times Square, was $495 a night. It went for $99 a night.
Wow.
You know, so you'd be paying that the equivalent of $495 over 2 weeks, 3 weeks time, and that would be like your subsidized rent. You could think of it that way. And I think when Hilton Grand Vacations, that is in the business of timeshares, they coordinated with them so that they created a model where you can convert your timeshare ownership points to stay in the Homewood Suites, especially if you were an essential worker, for free. You know, so it's like, believe it or not, indirectly, it's almost like an employee benefit by being tied to Hilton, whether you were a timeshare owner or a Hilton Honors member, where you have all these points that you've earned from staying there, you know, and they were able to capitalize on that. And then you mentioned Starbucks earlier. That's where Seattle worked with Starbucks. That's the birthplace of Starbucks. I remember when I was just there, when I went to Homewood Suites in Seattle near the convention center, they gave you the free breakfast, and it was only Starbucks coffee. So obviously, right. Hilton was working with Starbucks right there in their hometown. You know, so I'm sure that it's in their mindset, but I also perceive, like, based on the interview that I did, and I'll send you both privately offline to copy of that interview so you can see what was in their mind at that time. But the thing is that particular interview showed me that they're doing this forward thinking.
Yeah.
Without even realizing it. So it's almost like in their DNA of sorts. And I guess it's up to lawyers like yourself to try to translate that into whatever appropriate new legislation needs to be created to help with the displaced worker or the hybrid worker or the essential worker. You know, and I think one other close way that we've been able to see new laws or new protections for people coming back into our new society after the pandemic, I would have to say that the American Rescue Plan is proof right there. I mean, there is, never mind the individual stimulus that we all got back in 2021, but there are riders, and I did read it. I know, take it on a boring, on a boring snowy day. I just read the whole thing, and there was a section there about businesses coming back from the pandemic, whether you were economically disadvantaged, we can all imply what that means, or based on, you know, the pandemic itself, probably losing your job or being displaced, where you can get additional financing, either through the tax system or through grant programs that are out there that you can apply for as a business, and therefore refund your company. There was all the payroll protection that was part of that. And there are probably even other specialized laws in there to help with the existing disability resources that might exist with employers or other kinds of benefits for the person who takes sick for a couple of weeks, but in this case, pandemic related, like maybe because they are a long hauler, maybe because they have a comorbidity that was exacerbated by receiving the COVID infection. So all of these things, I think, is a marriage of both lawyers and healthcare practitioners to come up with the appropriate laws that would be enacted to help people in what's continually changing today.
It's interesting, Frank. Yeah, it's like, the fact that, like, we as lawyers, although we don't, create or enact the laws, like that's, Congress and such, but we certainly can create certain, say, policies internally, which are kind of like laws of the company, if you will. And of course, we can actually, as I mentioned, we certainly can lobby the government, even just, opine about what might be a good law, just, from a perspective of what might be interesting to discuss. I think that, one thing that the American Rescue Plan has an idea of is, we see this a lot, giving businesses incentives via tax credits to do the right thing. And right. So I think Hilton, as you mentioned, head of the game, is a good example. Maybe you could see that they'll get a benefit from the good publicity, the positive press, say the goodwill that's generated for their company. And I think that a lot of companies do recognize that, but for the ones that don't, to the employers that say, hey, why should I continue, for example, the emergency, you know, family medical leave if I don't have to, if it expired at the end of 2020? Or why do I have to continue the emergency paid sick leave if it expired? So the government says, well, we're not going to push it forward again, but we're going to say if you do this, we get certain tax credits and certain relief and certain economic incentives. So that incentivizing like businesses, as you said, Frank, you know, and I think in terms of mental health and COVID, if say people, companies want to increase, say, the disability leave of their employees, for example, their policies to extend longer disability leave for people who are suffering from COVID-19 symptoms or illness, that could be a great example. Maybe say the government might say, hey, if you extend disability leave or paid sick leave, you are eligible for a tax credit. And I think that the states have their own version of that and the federal government. So we really need to marry or combine this approach of incentivizing companies through tax breaks and through modeling of the right thing to do, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. And I figure, Phyllis, you could probably identify with this, especially in the work that you've done with the Share the Care organization. I mean, I gather, has there been adjustments made with the various teams that have come together for the caregivers, especially when they were no longer available to their nurse practitioner or whoever used to be there?
Well, you know, it was a trying time for everyone, whether you were a professional in home care or you were a care group surrounding someone who was surrounding and supporting a family caregiver who was trying to keep a loved one at home. Right. You know, of course, everybody was wearing masks. Everybody was, you know, washing and washing their hands and sanitizing very differently. I think most of those groups tried to maintain things as best as they could. But, you know, there wasn't an area on the planet that wasn't impacted by this. You know, I just want to say I love the whole idea of corporate social responsibility. And when we start talking about, you know, the Generation Zs, you know, the youngest generation we've kind of assigned a label to so far, they're 25 to 27% of the population across the United States. They're a big chunk of who we are. And people don't necessarily realize that because we get so focused on the aging population and baby boomers and that particular size. But the Generation Zs, they are very wedded to social justice. They are very wedded to corporate responsibility. They are not necessarily looking for a job or career with any organization that isn't committed to a higher purpose or a purpose of citizenship, not just in the sense of corporate citizenship, but planet citizenship. So right. They are looking to affiliate with corporations that are, you know, very, very vocal and out front about, let's just say, gun control or climate control. So also, you know, this, do I have a safe place for my worker? You know, does this really translate into, you know, something in our staff engagement scores? That's a major question is, do you get the sense that the company cares about you? Right. You know, and to play to Eric's, you know, sense that, you know, yes, this is going to be a higher expense for a corporation, but the return, the non-dollar return on that investment, just as far as even attracting the younger worker, and retaining the younger worker and having the younger worker have a sense of pride about where they're working because they are working for a corporation that has a sense of planetary citizenship, is huge.
We are now about to go into another break. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned for the final segment of this part two of mental health and employment law post-COVID right here on talkradio.nyc and Facebook Live.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
Informed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc. for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back. We're here with both Eric Sarver and Dr. Phyllis Quinlan, and we've been having for the last 45 minutes a very enlightening overview of the possibilities of alliances, basically as we're all, as a community, trying to evolve and react to the positive directions we can take a pandemic after it's finally resolved. Eric, I just realized here, there was a question that we had on your show that we were going to go over possibly on this one, which had to do with advocacy, mental health advocacy, that the law is proactive enough in requiring of employers to address it. I think we answered that question. Do you agree with me?
I think we did. Yeah, I think we gave some good examples as well in the last parts of it, two segments, I'd say.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. By the way, who has joined us right now is Sally Kalksma. She is going to be on my next hour, which is coming up at 6 o'clock, where we're going to actually have an episode about, what was the title that I gave it? Championing Life with Cancer. And that's going to be a very interesting take on, you know, and she has a very special story that I want everyone to be aware of. So after this show ends at 6 o'clock, we will say goodbye to Phyllis and Eric, and thanks always for what you've already done so far, especially when I was on your show on Tuesday, Eric, and Phyllis, you'll be here again, as we've already talked about. But I just want to point out that I have met all three of you through our guy, Sam Leibowitz. So I want to thank him out there, give him a shout out. And I mean, obviously, Eric, we work with him through doing our shows together.
Right.
But I got to say that, you know, never has there been a time where I've been more inspired by what he has done, not only with his show, but with this network, especially when he's always saying that the Conscious Consultant Hour, awakening humanity.
Yeah.
And what we've been talking about, you know, while the laws are constantly changing because of COVID, and not to mention that there has to be a more proactive stance, and Hilton has shown an example of doing that. Mm-hmm. It is getting to our core humanity that most people probably lost sight of when everything was more normal prior to COVID. And I think that through this network and even through this show and through the show you do, Eric, that we're doing our own part to try to bring everybody back together.
Thank you, Frank. I do think so too. And I'll echo you in that, and shout out to Sam Leibowitz and to the station. You know, I started on the station, like, I think it was late September 2020. And I have to say, in that time, every host I've met, including yourself, Frank, and you too tonight, Phyllis, seems to have very much a sense of just social responsibility and creativity and a certain liveliness about them, like a certain animated, you know, personality that I think has not been matched in other forums I've been in. So it's very refreshing. It's nice to be, you know, a fellow among fellows and with various people here. So yes, absolutely.
Appreciate that. I mean, essentially also, Eric, before we eventually, you know, move on past this episode, are there any things that you would like to highlight within your law firm or the kinds of work that you do that you want people, my listeners or viewers, to be aware of, especially when it comes to business law or civil rights management? We're having a theme this month on Frank About Health, where we're going to have a show on social justice in healthcare, which is coming out in a couple weeks. And next week, we're going to have Dr. George Andow come and talk about the pain of detachment. And COVID has been an environment where a lot of people have been detached and not by choice. So that's also a relationship to trauma. But I guess with each episode, there's a different narrative. And I just figured that there was no better way to start the month than having our sequel to Tuesday's show, because it's setting the stage to moving forward with the types of shows that can help continue to awaken humanity, as Sam would say, or to continue to bring awareness that a lot of people are just, either they're just not focused enough or they're just not knowing the right avenues. So is there anything you'd like to add about what you're doing?
Sure, I'm happy to add something, yes. So I just say that what I in my practice, my firm, I represent different employers, companies, management, industry agnostic in all areas of basically all different industries. And I think that along the lines of tonight, we're talking about being proactive and reactive. And so with respect to COVID-19 and the mental health disabilities and laws need to be considered and the policies that you consider in your company, I would say the message I have is that if you're a company out there, you know, it's better to come to your employment law attorney, such as someone like myself, like proactively say, hey, we want to comply with all the different federal, state, and city laws around COVID-19 compliance, around, say, reasonable accommodation for disabilities, people who might be sick, employees of ours, and in terms of just following the labor laws, wage and hour, that type of thing. So I think it always makes sense to come to someone like myself, like say, to help you to comply with the law. And then, of course, if you haven't and you're a company that, say, is being sued, or maybe you're in charge in the Department of Labor with an audit or a violation, it's just so important to nip it in the bud. And one of the goals I have is I'll defend companies when they've done something wrong, and we try to negotiate and resolve the matter if we have to go to court or mediation. But then it's like, how do we look forward in the future and say, how do we stop these things from happening? And along the lines of corporate responsibility, how is it possible to do the right thing by your workers and by yourself, not just to not get in trouble with the government or with fines or penalties, but also to increase employee morale? You know, I'll say one last thing. A lot of times I think businesses think, oh man, I have to follow these laws, it's gonna hurt me. If it helps the employee, it hurts me. And the reality is, if your employees are more engaged and healthier and happier, not only are they not suing you as often, but right. They're just producing more. So I try to get that message across to people that might need help. And my website I mentioned, that I didn't before, is www.sarver-law.com, which has my info, my email, telephone number, New York City address, et cetera.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, overall, Phyllis, what do you take in terms of the understanding that this pandemic has definitely created a paradigm shift with various industries, various sectors, private sector, public sector, not to mention the healthcare system? What do you think is the commonality in all of those various sectors? Or do you find that the healthcare sector in particular is almost hyper-changing due to the nature of almost being in contact with COVID? Unmute.
Sorry, I only think I can really speak from the point of authority on healthcare, and I'm glad you've given me this opportunity to share this, Frank, because it's an important point I want to make.
Sure.
The people who worked COVID, you know, and are still working the COVID part 1, 2, 3, 4 of, you know, whatever is going on out there, you know, depending on where you are across the country. You know, the consequences of COVID have not stopped rippling. If you're not dealing with a variant, you're dealing with the consequences of it, and so on, loss of friends and families, things of that nature. What has happened to the people that I am speaking with, and I am speaking with healthcare providers across the country, what has happened is they have a new sense of empowerment. So when I am working with them, trying to help them untie the knot of their COVID experience and make it, have it less likely be an episode of that could result in post-traumatic stress, and have it increase as an episode that could result in post-traumatic growth, the right. First question I ask them is, what have you learned about yourself? And everyone says, I'm stronger than I ever thought I could be. Leaders across the country in healthcare need to hear this. I'm stronger than I ever thought I could be, which means that the people returning to work now, or the people you are currently working with now, are not the same employees you were working with 2 years ago. They are far more empowered. They are far more confident. They are far more connected to a sense of mission and purpose and less likely to put up with unhealthy work environments. There is a leadership imperative going across the country right now that says you must do everything you possibly can to create the healthiest work environment possible and to create opportunities to capitalize on the sense of empowerment that your staff is bringing. It might be time for people to have a stretch opportunity. It might be time for a promotion. It might be time for asking people to go back to school or get another certification if you're looking to retain. But what's most important is that we create the healthy work environments around communication, collaboration, recognition, and making sure we understand and effectively manage disruptive behavior in the workplace. Because one of the reasons why people aren't coming back is they're not going to put up with the bullying and the chronic incivility. They rather work in a closet and go back to that.
Correct.
People need to embrace this. It's my number one message to leaders in healthcare and across the country as to the mentation of where people are at from an attitude and sense of empowerment. There has been a great post-traumatic growth in the worker. Capitalize on it.
Awesome. And to close, before we're about to end this episode of Frank About Health, I just want to say, thinking of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, basically what COVID-19 did was take the basic level out from under us. And we all found ourselves collectively working together, banding together, using technology to keep us together to be able to get through this. And I think that could be the reason why the mental health disruptions have occurred, because of a conscious unawareness of how the floor has dropped. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, by communicating it transparently, like you just did and like you have done, Eric, it's a matter of just keeping the message forward while we're still evolving with this and moving forward towards whatever new normal is coming. So ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of this special two-part series of employment law and mental health of post-COVID reality. Stay tuned for the next episode of Frank About Health coming here at 6 o'clock with my special guest, Sally Kalksma, where we're going to be talking about championing life with cancer. You know, and thank you again, Phyllis. We will definitely be in touch. And Eric, I will give you a call tomorrow. And, you know, feel free to exit when you are ready. And all of you out there on Facebook Live and talkradio.nyc, after this commercial break, we will begin the next episode. Stay tuned.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you, Frank. Good night, Phyllis.
Good night, Eric.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Informed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Howdy, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.